I've got to talk to somebody, God. No one else will listen.
Sounds like a hoot.
Mic drop. Two from Galilee, you and I in yesterday.
All right. By the power vested in me, I hereby declare this week's Friendly Town City Council meeting in order. Now, chant it with me. Friendly Town!
Yay! Welcome to Friendly Town City Council's weekly meeting. We meet here every Monday around 8 o'clock, depending on when the stand-ups are done with their stand-up jokes. We meet here every Monday, let's just say 7:30, just to get the people in here on time. We meet here every Monday at 7:30 to talk about issues affecting our community here in the fictional town, wink, of Friendly Town. My name is Mayor Tyler. I host these shows fairly frequently, and occasionally you have city council meetings that are hosted by our other city council chief member mayor people. There's Mayor John Hurst right here. Give it up for him. You'll be seeing him tonight, as well as your bartending mayor, Todd, who you are well acquainted with, I'm sure. And there's another, one of our other producers is not here tonight because he is, quote, moving boxes. That's his excuse. I think boxes is his slang for black tar heroin, personally, but you didn't hear me say that. Anyway, most of you guys know him. It's cool. Anyway, we here in Friendly Town came to a realization recently. We came to a really we had to admit something about ourselves. We're not that cultured. You know, we had a storage unit we had to all empty out as a team a couple weeks ago. We had to get rid of our hot dog surplus. You know, that didn't really require a whole lot of culture per se. I mean, unless you consider, you know, eating 8 hot dogs per stand-up culture, which I personally do, but you don't have to. There's no expectation on any of you that, you know, forcing Mayor Josh to, say, eat a hot dog every time he comes into contact with the microphone cable, because he does it a lot in his stand-up. You guys might have seen it during the open mic. But we've been having a good time recently here in Friendly Town, but it's about time we kind of, we sort of forced ourselves to kind of pass aside the stresses of the modern world and just kind of get back to basics. You know, all it takes is 15, 20 minutes a day where you can just sit down with a nice cup of hot tea or a Miller High Life or whatever you prefer to put in your body. Black tar heroin. I don't know. No judgment here. And read a book. You know, reading is fundamental, as they say. And as LeVar Burton told us many years ago, reading also makes you see a rainbow or something like that. I don't know. I didn't really pay attention to that show back in the day. I was too busy waiting for Babar to come on. But the important part here is that we are going to start the first ever Friendly Town Book Club. Yay! But none of the normal producers and hosts of the Friendly Town City Council meeting were qualified to really start or kickstart a Friendly Town Book Club. What we have done, however, is appoint a good friend of ours, the official Friendly Town Pagemaster. It is my honor to introduce to you Jax Fox. Grab this one.
I like
for right
how
now.
I got the tall one.
You know, so. Pagemasters require height. You know, I'm sorry that you, but you're uniquely qualified in your own way.
Yeah.
All right. So, so tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell about yourself, Mayor Jax, as a Friendly Town's official pagemaster. Other than obvious reverence for old Macaulay Culkin movies, what is it that makes you uniquely qualified to be our book club ambassador?
I have access to a bunch of books.
That's it. So what we're going to do tonight, maybe our Pagemaster Jax can explain how tonight's going to work. We actually have a number of performers. We have a big handful of people who are going to be coming up and talking about some of their favorite books, both books that they have known for a long time and books that they are going to discover are their favorite book of all time when they get on stage. Why don't you tell people a little about that?
All right. When you come on up, I'm going to hand y'all a book that I selected that otherwise would have ended up on the sad, cold, wet street. And I want you to give it a good pitch about how it deserves a new home. Or maybe about how you should use it as kindling. You know, it's a free country. Free city. You can do what you want to do.
Or a Pulitzer. One or the other.
Pulitzer. Yeah. That'd be a good one.
Or Caldecott, Newbery Medal, whatever.
Yeah, I don't think I have. Well, we do have a few that could qualify for a Caldecott, because that's for animation, not animation, but illustration in children's books. Newbery, I don't have a whole lot of young adult.
You don't have The Giver? You don't have The Giver by Lois Lowry?
I do not have The Giver, but I do have a book for you.
Ooh, let me find out what my favorite book is. So this is basically an indication of what you guys can expect tonight. And if I suck, then it's only going to get better. So, all right. So, Jax, Pagemaster Jax, I can't even tell you how much I appreciate this.
Do go on.
I have so many great memories wound up in Todd Mason's unauthorized biography. Unauthorized biography.
Real racy stuff.
Ross Perot. I think that's a good indicator of how obviously less than half of the room knows who Ross Perot is. I think that it's a good indicator that we're attracting a younger crowd, I think.
That's a good litmus test.
Yeah, there were at least maybe half of the open mic performers were not alive when Ross Perot ran for president in 1992. But, oh, man. But he's a personal hero of mine. You know, he brought clowning back into the presidency, which we have not seen since 1992. Someone who doesn't really want to be president. They're just a billionaire trying to make a stupid point. Like, when was that ever going to happen again, really? Oh, boo, right? Todd Mason's prose. Oh, my God. It just pulls up my heartstrings. Listen to this. My personal favorite section is the chapter called The Crusades, which Perot knows firsthand that enthusiasm can turn into abuse. It's so true. Yeah, no, Todd Mason hits the nail on the head with that one. Don't be too enthusiastic, because you're just going to be beating the shit out of someone very soon. A major drug trial was unfolding in 1979 in Tyler, Texas. That's me! I'm Tyler. It's in Tyler, Texas. It's a town that I'd like to think was named after. Yeah. As Perot began his war on drugs. Not just the war on drugs. His personal war on drugs. Ross Perot, there's a whole chapter here about how he would just go door to door knocking through bad neighborhoods being like, are there any drugs here? Let me hear about it. I'm all ears. Like, that was his personal drug war. It's his personal drug war, you guys. Two undercover police officers were star witnesses for the prosecution. In the middle of the trial, their car was firebombed and one was wounded by a shotgun blast. Doesn't it make you just want to move to Tyler, Texas tomorrow? At their next court appearance, they were flanked by unsmiling men in business suits and sunglasses. Unsmiling. That's the only time in history that adjective has ever been used in this book. It's not a word, but Todd Mason willed it to be so. Unsmiling men in business suits and sunglasses. Reporters traced the guards back to Perot, who issued this statement through EDS Public Relations. Can I do the voice? Can I do the voice?
Do the voice. Man.
A trained armed team has now protected both officers. This same level of protection is available to any law enforcement officer in Texas. Just the way that Ross Perot could spin an obvious bullshit lie into something so instantly relatable. Oh, man. Todd Mason. I want to figure out what it was that made Todd Mason... just look at him. Just look at this guy. Just look at this dude. He looks like James Lipton, like, on a bad day. Like, he looks like James Lipton if he got rejected from inside the actor's studio and had to start, like, his own, like, public access show in Tyler, Texas. A veteran Perot watcher. That's the first thing his book says. That's the first thing his bio says. He's a veteran Perot watcher. Todd Mason began covering the Texan entrepreneur in 1982 as Dallas Bureau Chief of Business Week magazine. He now writes for the Wall Street Journal. He lives in Waxahachie, Texas with his wife Meg and his two children, Lowell and Catherine. I would be willing to bet that he hasn't talked to Lowell and Catherine in many years. But, oh my God, I can't believe that you just knew. You just knew. Perot, the unauthorized biography. And according to Dallas Morning News, and I would echo this review, the real Ross Perot. That's the whole review. Just the real Ross Perot. It says that on the cover. It was probably taken out of context from the review from the Dallas Morning News that said, I really wish after reading this book for 300 pages that someone would actually tell me about the real Ross Perot and not this romanticized version of him. But, oh, man, just look at him. He should have been our president in 92, not that Clinton fellow. Am I right? All right, so Reform Party 2018, and if that even still applies. And thank you all. I'm going to go hug this book of Ross Perot right now.
There you go. Take it with you. So Tyler did a fantastic job there. I'm going to give you another fun example, because through my job, I recommend a lot of books. So I have my own little knapsack here full of weird books, and a lot of people like to have books recommended to them based on their interests. One that I kind of like is a little more about emotions, feelings, kind of your current state of mind. So I have a knapsack of books here that I can recommend to anyone in Friendly Town based on the reactions to current events. So I think a few of us have felt a little bit of rage towards men in general. We don't know where to place it. I think I have a good book for all of us. It's The Scum Manifesto by Valerie Soldanis. It's got some really solid action. She even goes so boldly as to outline how the members of Scum are going to take over the United States. But I think it's a little outdated because one of the things that she recommends is that they forcibly relieve bus drivers, cab drivers, and subway token sellers of their jobs and run buses and cabs and dispense free tokens to the public. I mean, that's pretty good. She's got some nice points, but a little of them are a little dated. So we've got that as our first book. If you guys are amazed that no one has tried a really public assassination attempt in the United States in a while, I have a fantastic and actually age-appropriate book for 8 to 12 called The Children's Illustrated History of Presidential Assassination. This actually is a real book, and I ordered it off Amazon because I heard the review for it. It's a little rough in the formatting because I think it's from a smaller publisher, but it's really well written. I think even for many of adults who don't have a great history of it, it's pretty nice. You get some nice funny illustrations on some of the better failed attempts. One of my favorites was, oh my gosh, Squeaky Frome. She tried to stand on a chair in an audience to shoot Gerald Ford, and that's why she is in prison, not because of anything with her involvement in the Manson family. But, you know, that could give you some idea of how badly people have decided that they need to really take power into their own hands. Wishing for a simpler time and wondering how to get there, got a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook. It's a bit of a misnomer. One of the only recipes in there are for pot brownies. But it seems pretty solid. It's got a lot of diagrams, a lot of useful information, although it doesn't really give you a good starting place. It's nice. So, curious as to what could possibly be next as a headline, I have a Ouija answer book. So, like, if you have a Ouija, you want a Ouija board, but you may not have a resident ghost, you just flip open the book. Oh, that's... I'm hitting a lot of the same ones. So this might be encoded somehow, but, you know, we've got a little book here for that. And lastly, if you're feeling just absolutely proud of the way that everything has been handled recently, I have the best book for you, The Vanishing American Outhouse, because you're clearly full of shit, and you might want to see where you need to put that, but it looks like a nice history. So that's my own little personal collection. that I wanted to share with y'all today so you can get some ideas of what to do, but I need to kind of pass the mic over because we have quite a few people who really want to talk about books. So the next person that we have coming on up was first in the last segment as well. So let's get her started. Welcome Alyssa Miller to the stage.
Oh, yes. The Murder House by David Ellis. I'm halfway through this book right now. I started in the middle. Because I'm all about the cover. I'm not a huge reader. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But I like to read in public. You know, I go to coffee shops, and I hold it open like I'm reading it. But that's why I didn't start at the beginning. Because I never, you never want to be that person at a coffee shop that's like, So yeah, I start around here. And if I'm feeling bold that day, I'll...
It seems like a sign. Something's coming to get you.
I don't know if there are trains in this book yet. I really don't know much about it. But I can tell you that I've gotten asked on, like, 6 dates while reading it. Because they're like, that girl likes to read, and she's into some weird stuff. I've read the same page about 4 times.
It's pretty deep.
Chapter 54. He rests, his check against the concrete wall, sniffing the faint smell of bleach. Yep. The chamber is all concrete. Floor, walls, ceiling. The acoustics are poor and the lighting is dim. There is no electricity in here and zero sunlight. So he makes do the three... Oh, I don't even know what that word is. And that's usually where I stop.
So if you need a book, you need a book with not great content...
I don't know why I'm not speaking in the microphone. Not great content, but like it looks cool to hold, it looks thick. This is the one to go with.
Thank you, Alyssa. I'll have to remember that. I mean, getting 6 dates just from the book, it's pretty good. So the next person to come up and pitch whatever they've been reading is Carson Barnes.
This is a great read. I would like to introduce Romantic Europe by Thomas Kinky. The French pronunciation. Oh, wow. Instant classic. This is super romantic. I don't know how your romantics go, but silence is a part of mine. Let's pick up where we left, shall we? Here's a picture. It's my favorite.
Lots of light, illumination from strange sources.
This is the Tower Bridge in London by John Elliott Burns. He wrote, "I have seen the Mississippi." He hadn't. "That is muddy water." It's not. "I have seen the St. Lawrence." This is true. "That is crystal water." "But the Thames is liquid history." That translates to, "I don't think I like black people." John's words, not mine. Another great book. Or... section. "I jotted down memories of the day and of the actual painting itself. The smell of bread in Belgium." Ooh. "The World War I soldier in Bloomsbury." That was a little, yeah. We all know what happened with the World War I soldier in Bloomsbury. It all added a sense of place I captured on my canvas. He has a way with words. Here we have the Wickworth Cottage. Speaks volumes.
Looks pretty traditional, Kincaid.
Traditional Kincaid. Is Kincaid someone that I should know? Because I did not know who Ross Perot was.
Well...
What?
You should... I don't think they have any stores and malls anymore, but he used to have stores and malls because basically he would create these pictures that middle-aged white moms would want to put on their walls. As long as they weren't already fans of Ann Getty's. If that kind of went into a more landscape version. So I guess this is how he feels about romantic Europe.
Ooh, it's great. Let's finish up here. Let's just take a look. This fine young gentleman. How can you not feel romantic? That
the
brassy
feelings.
Mustache. You could just feel his
facial
strokes of on the canvas.
I hope he did paint with his mustache. That might explain some of it.
Oh, this guy. He looks great. He looks good. That's all I had to say about that. Thank you so much for this.
You're welcome. Introduce you to a new piece of culture. There we go. So our next guest is someone you haven't seen on stage this evening, but who's regularly up here. Welcome, John Hurst. Oh, yeah. We did give the option of pre-selecting a book.
I stole this book beforehand.
So he ransacked the culture bag before.
So now that Mrs. Jax told me I could not review in yet another Star Wars book on stage, I would say Timothy Zahn is a genius, but we're not going to get part 3 of Heir to the Empire, the Thrawn trilogy, tonight. We're going to get... I went back to my children books here, and I went to the classic Sweet Pickle series for the book with the letter K, Who Can Trust You, Kangaroo? Which is the most accusatory title I've ever seen here. Like, look, first of all, look at this cover. Look at it very closely and not think that it's like, I cannot go by without thinking of a Pepe joke for this. It's like, this is already bad vibes already happening right here.
I don't know
here.
If they've ever seen a kangaroo before.
I don't know. This is like some weird chaotic donkey mix of a kangaroo with perfect teeth for some reason. I don't understand. Their tentative profile is amazing. The first page here has a listing of all the cast, and I'm going to... There's for each letter of the alphabet, there is a cast for this. And let me tell you, the headcanons already put me. I have shipped like 3 couples already. For example, like Kidding Kangaroo, which is the kangaroo's name, is already in love with, like, actually, like he's joking around, but Loving Lion actually loves him. And it even has like a quote thing, I love you, with a question mark. And then there's like later on, there's like Fearless Fish, who's a fish on a motorcycle because, yeah, okay. That's cool. And there's also X Rating Zerus, which I have no idea what that actually means in the children's book, and I'm scared to find out. That's the inventor of Pornhub right there, basically. But the book mainly goes through, first of all, like as any lovingly children's book goes through, it is a kangaroo who likes to make practical jokes and who the illustrator had no idea what any of the animals looked like. He likes to pour water on people, and basically the kangaroo is the equivalent of the guy who wears the college shirt from the John Belushi poster everywhere he goes on campus. So he goes, he prank calls his doctor, first of all, and the doctor, and it's like, hey, I can't get out of my house, because that's a problem for a doctor, right? And like, the doctor opens up the door, and water pours on him. It's like, oh, I got you, that's his only joke. It's, again, equivalent of an internet
troll. That seems
troll.
Like a good way to get accidentally diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, yeah, totally, very totally.
If there's only one doctor in town, I mean.
Yeah, there's only 26 people in this town. You mess with one of them, you basically mess with them all. Yeah, like, literally it says, like where all 26 sweet pickles live and work and play. And they have, like, a very small town, like, very bad SimCity village going on here. So, anyway, Kidding Kangaroo decides that he's like, yeah, I pretty called my doctor. He pushes the Fearless Fish. The Fearless Fish was training that day. He was going to do an Evel Knievel stunt, doing, like, what no fish has done before. Kidding Kangaroo ruined it. and like gets very close to him. If you can see this right here, it's like this is basically the equivalent of the, like, it's like, hey, you like raisins? Yeah. And then he like just wanders away or something. It's very, this is very MS Paint creepy going on here. Later on, Kenny Kangaroo grows to the size of the town and starts smashing cars, apparently. Because he's like, I don't know if you can see this, but they apparently clearly did not understand the size of an actual kangaroo going on here.
I think they just imagine Australia being full of, like, radioactive evil monsters.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And so
is,
this sounds like maybe the person was from New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So. Like, this is definitely New Zealand propaganda towards being, like, anti-Australian. This is way, like, this is why you can't get into the country very well. Like, they want to make it, like, very exclusive in there. They're like, Australia, you don't want to go there. You want to go to New Zealand where we have the Hobbit Town stuff. And, basically, he starts filling up garages with water, apparently. He continues on that train because he is clearly, he's either a homewrecker, a practical joker, or an H, like a home, like, what's HRG or whatever, like the home network show. Yeah, that. And, he's just a reality show host at this point. Finally, but this ends, like, he continues his water spray of madness going on here. He goes to the car wash where all water lives in the village. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to, like, scream for help here. And, like, he's got this, like again, donkey ears, not a kangaroo.
That is definitely a donkey.
This is very, very New Zealand-like here because, like, clearly they just want to – this is like, almost borderline racial towards Australia right now. But he's like, yeah, I'm going to turn on the water here. I'm going to get everyone doused with water in the whole village. It's going to be a good laugh. And the rest of the village basically is like, yeah, we're just not going to answer that for a while. And they just leave him outside. He gets locked in his own car wash. Some other stuff happens there. He's like, I can't get out. Help. And like, they finally let him out because like, they're not evil. Basically. They're just like, it's like, hey, we want to teach you a lesson. And the kangaroo, which is just like, clearly like, this is basically what I want every Twitter troll to feel at the end of the day. Like just like crying and screaming and like in shame and sadness. But, but like, it's like, yeah, you learn your lesson. It's like, oh yeah, sure, learn my lesson. And the very last page here is, I'll have to try that out on someone else. Ha, ha. Which again, donkey, not kangaroo. Anyway, this is, you know, clearly an influence of mine growing up, and I hope that you read it to your children someday. So thank you.
Thank you, John. You can take that with you, so you can spread it to the small minds of Friendly Town. But that. Well, you know, a little bit of both. I meant, like, little people, little humans. That's not working. I'm pretty small myself. So the next person that we have come up somehow got a 4.5 on the list. So this sounds like a half act, but we'll give her the whole time. So welcome Jamie Alexis to the stage. Oh, she pre-selected as well.
All right, this is a great book, and I would like to read to everyone from it. I think it addresses a serious problem in Friendly Town. Satan is a master weaver. He prides himself on the fact that he's able to weave evil material into good material. One example is color. Anyone who deals with the supernatural will tell you that color is the language of the spirits. In the New Age movement, color therapy, or chromatherapy, is very common. New Age color therapists claim that colors are able to help you by changing your moods, healing you, predicting your future, and can even give you power.
I hope everyone's taking notes right now.
I hope so. Here is an example of how New Agers take something that God has created and perverted its meaning. The rainbow that God created was to show Noah that he would never again destroy the world by a flood. Duh. But the rainbow was a blessing to Noah. But it's used by the New Age movement to symbolize the bridge into the occult. It's the bridge that crosses from the natural to the supernatural. Let me give one more illustration of this perversion. My son recently came back from a mission trip to Canada. My son, Carson Barnes.
All the people you need to convert in Canada. Clearly, it's a country of heathens.
All the young people were taught how to use the wordless book and the wordless bracelet. And each bead and every color opens a new avenue of witness, such as black represents sin, red represents the shed of the blood of Jesus, green represents growing in Christ, white represents being washed clean by the blood of Christ, and yellow or gold represents heaven's splendor. I think we know where this is going. Is it by accident that the Power Rangers are color coordinated?
No, tell me more.
Are the colors an accident? I say absolutely not. The Black Ranger. Black is linked with night and darkness and by extension with death. And the night that ends a man's day, mourning, sorrow, with evil, the devil, and the powers of darkness. The White Ranger. White is representative of the chief status of a druid priest. Green represents earth and its life-giving qualities. The red is permanently the color and the words for red in many different languages. But
I like the direction this is going.
It's also the color that Satanists wear when they're practicing sexual magic.
Yep. I thought you didn't wear anything when you do that.
If you're a Satanist, you do. The Yellow Ranger. Yellow is ambivalent, but can mean perfection, wealth, and glory, but also jealousy, hatred, and treachery. The Blue Ranger is, blue's complicated. It's the color
it's not complicated
of
yet.
The unclouded sky. It's linked with the gods ruling the sky and Jupiter. Pink Ranger. Pink could represent a feminine color. That's all it says for pink.
That's clearly linked to Satanism.
Yeah. So the question is, are your children being morphed or changed by the Power Rangers? Not long ago, a concerned grandmother in West Virginia asked me to pray for her grandson. She told me that he's about 3 years old and walks around the house saying, "I'll kill you. I'll cut you up." He watches a lot of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Another Christian lady approached me about the violent tendencies in her young son. The worried mother told me that when he doesn't get his way, he pretends he has razor blades for fingers.
Sounds like a good imagination.
You may call it childhood imagination.
Oh, I'm being proven so wrong.
So you need to ask everyone in Friendly Town, are your children committed to you and your family, or are they committed to an imaginary family of Power Rangers? And if you need anything else that will sell you on this book, the back cover says, "This is not a book about child molestation."
That is the highest praise. I am becoming so cultured, even now, because personally I haven't read any of these books, so I'm taking all y'all's word. Part of the reason I wanted to bring this as a selection was I felt it spoke really highly when the name of the book was called, that we just heard the excerpt from, was Who's Watching the Playpen? From the author of 14 Things Witches Hope Parents Never Find Out. I need to get a hold of that book since clearly they're keeping knowledge from me. So, the next person that we have on up is going to be Beth Tompkins. Come on up. I'm going to give you the book that I was about to hand over last time.
Okay, I'm going to preface this by saying I wish I'd gotten this book about 15 years ago. It's called White Men Don't Have Juju. And other than a half Filipino boy, one lost weekend in Cleveland, Tennessee, this is all I know. White men don't have juju. But it is an American couple's adventure through Africa. So all those $50 flights to Vegas that I've taken just to lose $40 on blackjack and drink about $50 in free Bloody Marys, I could have spent on a trip to Africa where I would have learned, Jax, thank you for this, by the way.
You're welcome.
I'm feeling healed.
It was definitely for you.
This is a healing process. If we are racist, we asked Kristen, what are we doing here? Why did we sell our house and leave our jobs? So I am unemployed. And I live in a house with three other adults, none of whom I get to sleep with. So that's a valid question. But Kristen crossed his arms in righteousness and he lectured on our attitude. You don't know these people like I do. He said, they are simple, poor, and honest. Which I'm looking at a crowd of comedians, so clearly y'all feel me. Feel me.
I don't know about the honest part. But.
They have no reason to lie. So if my guide said that you said this thing, then I believe him. So honesty. So white men don't have juju. Honesty is questionable. But I think, you know, from learning through this and the myriad notes that I've taken. See, I used that day, that word of the day calendar. I did. Didn't
Paying
go to
off.
Waste. But, you know, when we look at bad juju, in parts of Sierra Leone, a fine of 25 leones could be levied if you're caught looking. And I know walking down Gay Street, I've gotten some looks. I'm pretty sure some 25 leones would just definitely kind of, buy me some weed for a week or two.
Any kind of eye contact at all?
You know, so...
That sounds pretty good, though.
I think the most important thing is to understand... Oh, gosh, I can't read that. That's about... Oh, gosh.
Then don't.
No.
This book is full of forbidden knowledge,
There's
apparently.
There's bad shit that goes down in Africa for women. I'm just going to say. But many sweaty hours later, that's more my speed. All right. A rumble of contentious voices broke out in the bus. Look, Megabus is reasonable. They keep the lights dim, Jax. They don't need to know what's going on in row 23.
And I mean, you may just find your soulmate who is, you don't know who they are. But you know that you have that connection on that three-hour drive.
I have watched Coming to America. A Girl Can Dream. A Girl Can Dream. So Coming to America was a film that came out in about 1984 with Eddie Murphy. It's very funny. You should totally look it up. It's probably on Netflix or solarmovies.ru or whatever. But I'll close in praise of White Men Don't Have Juju by Pam Asciano, because of course it was a woman. Stepping around drunkards, sleeping in burned-out doorways among broken glass, we found the Hotel Lamar. The manager said he had one room left on the sixth floor. It was a bit expensive because it had air conditioning and a private bath. Both sounded great, but neither worked, nor the door lock, nor was there electricity to run the elevator. But that, Jax, is the price of YOLO.
Thank you. Thank you, Beth. I am learning so much from all of y'all's long hours of reading these books that I rescued from the trash can, essentially. So the next person that we have coming on up, we heard from him earlier. Welcome Todd Lewis to the stage as I select his book. That's not the one I want. You get a good one. All these are really good, but this one looks especially juicy.
So, I was in the bookstore looking for The Price of YOLO, and when I couldn't find that, I settled on God and Vitamins by Marijorin Holmes. She says, vitamins, exercise, diet, and faith have changed my life. They have made me a more healthy, happy, vital, productive, and loving human being. They can do the same for anyone who really wants them to. Seems like a strange statement. If you don't know much about this lady, she is America's favorite inspirational writer. Her many best-selling books include I've got to talk to somebody, God. No one else will listen.
Sounds like a hoot.
Mic drop. Two from Galilee, you and I and yesterday. These are the best fucking book titles of all time.
Christian books usually are.
And most recently, Lord Let Me Love. She has been a columnist for the Washington Star and Woman's Day magazine, and her articles appear in magazines. She's the mother of four, grandmother of four. That's tricky math. She lives on a beautiful lake near Manassas, Virginia, where she enjoys swimming, canoeing, and water skiing.
Oh, my God.
I would give this book 7 stars out of 10. My favorite line from it is, have we really licked scurvy?
Have we? Have we, Todd?
Well, it is commonly assumed that scurvy is a disease of the history books, like the Black Plague. So I think that's a very definitive answer.
So certain.
So under this, I found a second book, which I don't think's in heavy publication, and seems to be the ramblings of a madman. And I'd like to talk about that for a second.
Please do.
Tyler Sonicshin, UT Geography, 865-555-5757. I've heard of all of the bands.
Was that a related note?
A list of things that are great about Connecticut. Think about some cool things about Connecticut. This book says Ross Perot started War on Drugs. I didn't even know he was on War on Drugs. This joke doesn't work because young people don't know who Ross Perot is and old people don't know who War on Drugs are. Boy, don't you hate people who can't tell the difference between goth rock and emo rock? Boy, don't you hate people that can't tell the difference between alternative rock and grunge rock? People think geography is just maps, but it's also a bunch of other really tedious shit. My favorite sports teams are the Washington Nationals and the Washington Capitals, because those guys are probably huge disappointments to their parents, too. Todd Lewis asked, only I can misread my own name. Todd Lewis asked if I could use my notebook. That was weird as hell. He's like a goddamn lunatic. And then there's just like a bunch of like 20 pages like defending racial cleansing or ethnic cleansing. It's really weird. But those are the two books. I give them both 7 out of 10. I would recommend them, good for families or people that don't have enough God or vitamins.
Are they combined books?
Yeah.
Is the second one a sequel?
I think so. I think she really had some footnotes to work out, you know, among herself. And God said, let there be light. She'll get back to vitamins in a minute.
All right.
I've been Todd Lewis. Thank you. I think we should all read books more.
Give it up for Todd. You know, sometimes you do find books like that. I actually did randomly buy a book in a bookstore one time that was just white-bound book that I realized later somebody probably just self-published and shoved in a bookstore. So glad I gave that bookstore an extra, like, $10. So the next person that we have coming on up, again, is Josh Lampley. Here is your book, sir.
I just want to say I went out to lunch with my son. He got home from college. We met at my favorite restaurant, the booth at Tom Thumb. And he slid a book across the table to me and he said, Father, you and I don't always see eye to eye. You should read this piece of literature. And of course, I'm talking about The Key to Your Expected End.
So clear. Obvious, classic for the ages.
Of course. From the Captivity series, for those who are wondering. Author Kate Souza takes Israel's journey in, through, and out of prison. And he told me that I wasn't very accepting of other ideals, of other people. And so I gave this book a read. And I just want to start with the first passage that truly changed me, and I will never be the same. Lastly, you need to know there is always a period of waiting between the time you plant and the time you harvest. Think about it. If you planted a seed in the ground right now, would you stand over it, expecting a plant to immediately spring up? No. This would be ridiculous. Little backstory, I'm a failed farmer, and this book saved my business. I can now pay my son's college tuition if I wanted to. I don't. He goes to a liberal arts college instead of a right-wing arts college.
You can't support that.
I can't give my money to the liberals. I actually said that to him over a bag of Sun Chips, and he told me, please look at page 126. There's a passage that directly relates to this moment. It is the joy God gets when his children finally take action on what he created them to be, their expected end, because it is called the bold type, master's unbold type, happiness. It also means it is supernatural. When you are obedient to act on your assignment, you get to come and share in it. My son was, of course, trying to tell me that I should take my own life. I won't lie and say that there weren't moments when I considered it beforehand, but pointing it out in text from the Honorable Katie Souza really changed the way I thought about things. And Jax, I want you to know, they were having a $2 for $3 Gatorade deal at the Tom Thumb that day. And so I decided...
That's really good.
It was real good.
Really good.
But only the weird flavors. No fruit punch, no cool blue.
It was like the purple that you never
know
what it is.
It's like strawberry kiwi. Yeah. These weird
combining ones. Fruits, that's but not natural.
It's not natural. It's not natural at all. Sorry.
No, you're just speaking your truth from this book.
I'm just
you
telling.
You were moved.
It's
removed.
True. I wasn't the same. I wasn't the same. So I decided it was time for a peace offering with me and my son. And we cracked two delicious grape Gatorades, clinked them together, and read the following passage. Many times, Nehemiah's enemies used fear and the threat of physical harm to try to get him to stop working on the wall. Fortunately, Nehemiah continuously responded to each attack with prayer, and because he did, the scripture said, Nehemiah 6:15, the wall was completed in 52 days. And if there's something I can cheers over, it's the wall being completed in 52 days. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Josh. Keep it up for Josh for sharing his truth from his son. Sharing through literature is a very important way to communicate. And that's why we welcome our next guest up to the stage, Clinton Ricks.
This is, in fact, nervous laughter because I cannot read.
It's okay. That one has lots of pictures.
That's why I wear this shirt.
It's making me look smart.
It does.
I would know what it says, but people usually say it when I say it says. And they say, oh, the brainy bunch.
The brainy bunch.
Actually, I'm just the pathological liar. I can't read. Oh, the redneck before Christmas.
Gotta.
We may have taken a few donations from guests.
One of my neighbors might have slipped me this. Just that good old-fashioned Western canon. I don't know if Santa has a bad hygiene or a gold tooth, but I'm digging it, if you can see. This actually fits my MO. I love being able to have a book this large in my hands. That would make it real better is if there are no words here, because I really can't read. Because I knew that this was going to be right here, because me and Jax rehearsed this before I came up here.
It's very well staged.
Let's see. Yep, just what I assumed. Not one brown or black person in this book. Staying true.
I don't know what to say about this children's book. It's, you know, not a very inclusive image of the night before Christmas.
Oh, no. This is the Jeff Foxworthy version. I know comedy. This has him written all over it. Oh, God, you won't believe this if I show you these pages.
Show us.
There are four possums pulling a farm truck. I can't make this possums. Up. Most deaf. Oh, not even staying true to the lore. Where's Rudolph? I imagine it would be a raccoon in this telling. Oh, man. Oh, gosh. What I really enjoy about this is the decorative picture of Elvis Presley in the back here.
I bet it's velvet.
Oh, probably.
It looks velvet.
Let's see. I've never read this, so we're going to go through this adventure together. Ooh, I like this one. When he winked his eye, I knew for sure. Oh, they even have the dialect is, I guess, what would be appropriate for who be given this book. I don't know.
Probably someone in the Mid-South who likes Jeff Foxworthy. I was taking donations, so.
When he winked his eye, I knew for sure he'd treat us right. Why, he might even leave me some ammo tonight. Oh, Lord.
This is clearly why it's only white people. Oh. This is a special Santa.
Oh, gosh. So. I stood there dreaming of Whitetail while I watched him work. Then he stopped and, like a real man, let out a fart and a burp. Because that's what real men do.
Otherwise, you just don't know if they're even human.
Speaking of dietary needs, he topped off our stockings with moon pies and bottle rockets, then squeezed up that stove vent like spam in your pocket. I don't know what's going on here.
I'm worried about who puts spam in their pocket.
I'm worried about how sturdy this house is to keep a full fucking car on it. Did Santa come tonight? Nah, boom, boom. Oh, shit. You can't even sneak in. Oh, man, one more page and then I'm gonna.
This seems like it has too many layers for the amount that were allotted for book club.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. Check out this. I bet you can't guess what this Wheel of Fortune, if you can see it, is going to say.
Let's see it.
What's
let's
that going
it.
On right there?
Oh, geez. I'll solve the puzzle. Take this job and shove it. So at least they were making a good reference there. Although I think that's probably the only good reference in there, because this seems like a sad, stereotypical redneck.
Most definitely. But if you need very in-depth discussions about capitalism and modern day living in the South, I would recommend this book for you and your friends for the holidays. So.
Thank you so much, Clinton. That was a wonderful review. I really like getting into the layers of these books. As I said, I have not pre-screened these books, although the cover art was seemed pretty bright and flashy. And as I said, I was taking donations from folks, so clearly that was someone's favorite book. So our next guest that we're going to welcome to the stage is Pamela Langston. Come on up, Pamela. She has pre-selected a book, which is good because we're starting to get to the bottom of the culture bag. So we're pretty limited. I can only bring what I could carry. E-readers were a little beyond us, so.
Good evening. I have been called a very correctly behaving person, and I'm going to read to you from Miss Manners' Guide to Excruciatingly Correct Behavior by Judith Martin. I have been known to be a very mannerable person, a second Judith Martin, if you will. That I hear it all over Friendlytown, So I just want to share with you a few tidbits that may help the citizens of Friendlytown be more excruciatingly correct.
We need all the help we can get.
Mm-hmm. Referring to one's wife. Dear Miss Manners, what do I call my wife?
It's a conundrum I'm in frequently.
I wonder all the time. Gentle reader, probably honey. How would Miss Manners know? Possibly you're asking what to call her when referring to her in conversations with other people. Use her name, or if you have, no brainer, right? Or if you have trouble remembering names, refer to her as my wife. What are to be avoided are terms that suggest you know her too little or too well, such as Mrs. or Shouty. Avoid mother at all costs, as this will slam her vagina tightly shut. So I hope that was enlightening to you, good citizens of Friendlytown.
That was very enlightening.
I'm glad. I want to clear up all confusion. Romance in the audience. Dear Miss Manners, I should like to bring your attention to a matter which I believe deserves your censure. I refer to couples who are so close that they totally obstruct the view of the person who sits behind them at the movies. I am far from the enemy of romance, and I have only sympathy for those so enfeebled that they need to lean upon each other, although in that case, one can think of institutions more appropriate to the circumstances. I don't like to spend $12.50 to look at the back of someone's head. Gentle reader, romance and getting a clear view of what is going on are opposite experiences, but should not be irreconcilable. Perhaps you could suggest a compromise, such as, excuse me, but I wonder if you two would mind holding hands instead. Or maybe you could give the gentleman a nice blowjob. That way, only one head will be in my way.
This is clearly before theater seating had come to the Friendlytown multiplex.
Exactly.
But it's good to know because a few of us do like to slum it down to the Dollar Theater occasionally. And
presents for a second wedding. Dear Miss Manners, I would like to know if it is expected or necessary to buy wedding gifts for second and third marriages when the others ended in divorce. My husband says yes, and I say no. We are invited to both seconds and thirds. Gentle reader, this sort of thing has got to stop somewhere, especially with the price of silver being what it is today. Since your romantic friends show no sign of stopping, Miss Manners suggests that you do. Presents need not be provided for second or third weddings, although for a fifth wedding, the gift of a silent-eyed lace glass of Chardonnay is recommended.
Oh, cheapskate.
know.
It just sounds like he's planning ahead, and she doesn't want to face facts in that marriage. You know, they can be a little touchy. One person knows, the other person doesn't yet.
I will leave you with one last tidbit of information. I think it's very timely. Coming out. Dear Miss Manners, how ought a well-bred person to respond when an acquaintance comes out in the contemporary sense of making public one's sexual taste? I once received such a revelation in a Christmas card. And for months, I was at a loss as to what to write back. I felt obliged to make an intimate revelation in return. What should I have done? Gentle reader, whenever anyone makes a sexual revelation of any nature to Miss Manners, she always replies, "How nice for you." Miss Manners sometimes gets into trouble that way when she hasn't paid close attention to the particulars of the revelation. However, it is not as much trouble as one can get into playing "Can you top this?" or "Guess that gender." I hope you've enjoyed my reading of Miss Manners' Guide to Excruciatingly Correct Behavior. And anything to make our lives more excruciating is always correct. Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela. I definitely think that if we ever get a Friendly Town etiquette column, she should definitely be at the helm. Maybe just general advice, but etiquette gets pretty funny sometimes. So the next person we're going to welcome, I don't think we've seen him on the Friendly Town stage yet before. We're going to welcome Josh Arnold. Do I personally know? Come on up, Josh. Oh, he's brought his book. I'm like so prepared. I like want to hand out these like dregs, but not yet.
Well, the prompt was to talk about your favorite book. So of course, when I saw my favorite book in the sack, I had to jump at the opportunity to do so. The culture sack, indeed, yes. That book, of course, being Auntie Anne's My Story, the detailed narrative of the creation process behind everyone's favorite brand of pretzels.
Yeah. I bet this is going to be juicy.
By Ann Beeler. In case anyone's ever felt like they've bought a pretzel for $2 but needed to spend $4.50 to learn the history of the pretzel that they purchased.
You got to make up that overhead somewhere.
This book's here for you. At first, I was intrigued because her name is Auntie Anne, but this girl is clearly 12. So that was... there was some kind of a chronological misordering there. I learned later in the book that she began twisting pretzels at the year of 1987, which doesn't give you much context, but she's 42. And she looks great for 42. That's my thought on that.
Pretzels are the fountain of youth.
There's an interesting tidbit in the beginning of this book that says, Auntie Anne Beeler often receives calls and letters asking, "Who is Auntie Anne? Is she a real person? What does she look like?" I feel like if you've gotten her address to be able to mail her an actual letter, you've probably gotten past her being a real person, but maybe not. Maybe someone just writes Auntie Anne on the envelope and it finds its way to her somehow.
Just like Santa.
Down here at the bottom, it says that she grows up in Pennsylvania's Amish country and that her pretzel is unique and gives her life an unexpected twist. Which you might be surprised to hear that is actually the only time they used that pun in the whole book. I was impressed.
That's
with
their
them.
Loss.
They really,
that is really their
they were
loss.
Very reserved about it. There's a picture here in the beginning. I assume the child is Auntie Anne because everyone else looks depressed. So they look really, actually really upset to be in a photo. But she's ecstatic because she knows she'll be the one successful person from the family. I do like how here it gives you the summary of the whole book at the beginning, which was nice, just in case, like, they were ahead of their time on TLDRs right there. You don't have to read the whole damn thing. There's some quotes here from her parents, but I'll come back to that in a second, because it says here that her story begins on January 16th, 1949. And then the quote from her dad says that hard work never hurt anyone, before you go on to learn that she comes from a German heritage. Which, that's poignant, because I can't think of a single thing around 1949 that German hard work did that hurt anybody. So that's nice. In the back, you can learn some more about Ann Beeler's life. She began the concession stand to sell her pretzels to support her husband's vision, which sounds kind of sexist until you think about the fact that she's 42 and apparently didn't have a job until that point. So that's nice that she got something there past middle age.
That's squarely middle age, though.
Yeah, that's...
Squarely.
In 1946, that might actually be a bit beyond, even. Yeah. So we don't actually know. I mainly started reading through here to try and learn how these pretzels came to be, because they talked about the unique twist, and I wanted to find out what it was. I largely found out that it's mostly singing in German and praising God. I couldn't actually find anything about the recipe.
So is that what they get all the teenagers at the mall to do? Do they have to make them all before they open so that no one hears their secret hymns flavor the pretzels so deliciously?
It looks like salt. It's actually ground up bits of Bible that they sprinkle on the top of the pretzel.
So that's why they have to sell these books for $4.50.
Yep.
Because they're buying other books wholesale, man.
They try to show you the ingredients here, which appear to be equal parts leaves and Elmer's glue. And whole chunk erasers as well.
So that's how they get you.
That's probably what gives it the gaminess, the chewiness, is the eraser.
So after you finished this book, how did it make you feel?
Enlightened, really, enlightened. Is how I would describe it.
Would you recommend it to the citizens of Friendly Town who are interested in pretzels, or does it have more than just pretzels?
Assuming that you have an interest in pretzels and also creepy children's choruses, this book is a fantastic read.
Yeah. I think that covers a good bit of our audience here today.
Right. Yeah. Real quick, as a closing note, she mentions here that she spent most of her carefree hours gliding on the ice, playing songs. And the song here, I don't know what she played them on. You can play an instrument while ice skating. That's pretty impressive. But the song here that she specifically notes is Crack the Whip. Which may be revelationary about how the pretzels were originally made. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway. I thoroughly enjoyed this book. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
Thank you, Josh, for our second very capitalist book. But, you know, that's the kind of culture that I'm having to try to bring to Friendly Town. And our last reviewer / book club pitcher of the evening is going to be Drew Harper. Come on up. I'm going to give you one of my personal favorites.
Oh my gosh, thank you. So, this book costs 5 cents in McKay's. Which, what?
We got to hear you.
Oh. This book costs 5 cents in McKay's? I want to say that Josh Lampley stole my premise, but that's not really true. So I'm going to do the same thing, but not as well.
That's all right.
And, if anyone in this bar knows me, which only Jax Porter Fox does, you know that my mother died when I was very young, which is hilarious.
Yeah, everybody should laugh.
It's okay. I don't remember very much about her, except for her favorite book, which was Biblical Demonology. So some annotated. I found some. The premise is life advice from my dead mother. Okay, so I found her personal copy of this book, and on the subject of how she met my father.
This is going to get good.
This is not good. The only valid conclusion... Hey, Mom, how'd you meet Dad? The only valid conclusion, therefore, which can be drawn, is the belief that Satan and demons, like other religious convictions, which have expressed themselves in multifarious ways in different ages, is not an invention at all, nor the fancy of insane men, but it can be traced to its ultimate source as a primitive divine revelation. That's great.
Was she calling your father Satan?
I think so. He's some kind of demonic figure.
Maybe just possessed.
Hey, Dad. I really honestly never even spoke to her. It was before I developed the ability of speech that she died. I was 13 months old. But had I been able to ask her about relationships, I fancy she would say. Little wonder then that, quote, one that useth divination, or, quote, one that practiceth augury, is placed in the same category with the sorcerer, the medium, the wizard, and the necromancer as, quote, an abomination to Jehovah.
Augury is pretty difficult since that involves cutting open birds.
I'm glad you know what that is, because it's
looking at their guts.
Yeah.
Used to be popular. A little out of favor now.
And I like to think, I don't know very much about her personal life. I learn more and more every passing year. As for much of my life, my father was silent on the subject.
So you had to turn.
But
to
I like to think
book.
That if she had one piece of advice for her gay son, it would be that superlative success in congregating the kings and potentates of the earth and their armies is not to be wondered at. Rejecting God's truth and God's Christ inevitably means accepting the devil's lie and Satan's antichrist.
Ooh. Pointed. Thank you, Drew. And thank you, everyone who came on up to share in the bag of culture with what they've learned, with what I've been able to schlep to Friendly Town from the mythical free bin. But I think all of us can leave a little wiser, a little more well-read, if even it's from blurbs from other folks. Although I think that might be more than some people read. So I think we're good. Thank you, everyone. Good night. Join us next week here at Friendly Town. Do we have a theme? We have a wonderful Facebook page, which we really do update. And by we, I mean Tyler, possibly Todd, and John, just because I'm not involved in that, in that level. But they'll update with the next theme, which is probably be something equally as wonderful as our delightful book club this evening. But just find us on Facebook. Just search Friendly Town. You'll find us. Have a good night, guys.